Hello, this is William F. Nolan. I want to give a little bit of background to the story, The Man Who Stalked Hyde, before I read it to you. A few years ago, I was on a trip to Europe, and one of the cities I visited was Edinburgh, Scotland. I found it to be absolutely fascinating, and I walked into Old Town at night over the cobblestone streets, and I immediately thought of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, because that's where Stevenson had lived when he wrote the story. And that was his home city. And it had a real ambience, a real atmosphere to it. And I could feel the footsteps of Mr. Hyde, or the feet, moving across the cobbles. And I just thought to myself, someday I'm going to do something with this. Edinburgh's a fascinating city. And I made some mental notes about it, went home and didn't think any more about it until I heard from Daniel Olson, who said he was putting together a Gothic anthology and wanted a new story. So I immediately thought of Edinburgh and Robert Louis Stevenson. And the result is the story I'm going to read to you now, The Man Who Stalked Hyde. Edinburgh, Scotland. Rich in Gothic history. A beautiful city with a violent past. Divided into Old Edinburgh and New Edinburgh, or Old Town and New Town. I had come to explore both, to savor the light and dark of this legendary city, from modern apartment buildings to cobbled alleys, from ale-reeking pubs, there are over 700 in Edinburgh, to chic restaurants. I expected to be surprised by what I would find here, but I got much more than a surprise. I almost lost my life in Edinburgh. I want to tell you about it. You don't have to believe me. I can hardly believe that the events I'm about to relate really happened, but they did. My Edinburgh adventure began with a truly delicious noon meal at the Café Royal Oyster Bar in Newtown. Victorian interior, lots of polished brass, marble floor, stained glass windows which filtered the light of a warm spring day. I had ordered a house specialty, Coul Saint-Jacques Perisson, scallops in a cream and mushroom sauce, and was just finishing my meal when my waiter, a sallow-faced young man with protruding front teeth, walked over to my table and asked for my autograph. "Aren't you Charles Lanyon?" "Yes," I said. "How did you..." "I recognized you from the photograph on your book cover," the young man told me. "I read all your books, Mr. Lanyon. I, too, have a strong interest in Gothic literature. No one writes about the Gothic era better than you do." "Well, that's nice to hear," I said as I signed my name on the back of the menu he handed me. "I didn't know I had fans here in Scotland." "Oh, we're a very cosmopolitan city," the waiter said. "I belong to a Gothic writers group. We meet every month." "Good for you," I said. "I assume you'll be visiting Edinburgh Castle." "I plan to, yes." "Say hello to the ghost for me."
"Ghost?
Surely you heard about the ghost of Edinburgh Castle." "Afraid I missed that one. People say he lives in a cave beneath the castle, and he's been seen at night. But no one has ever found the cave. Perhaps you'll be the one." "Perhaps," I said, and smiled. Our conversation ended with me deep in thought. A vast park area separates New and Old Edinburgh. The next morning, I started out from Newtown, walked down Princes Street to the park area, crossed the Waverley Bridge into Old Town. Yellow tides of daffodils bloomed in spring abundance, and the sight of cherry blossoms lightened my step. I headed for the Royal Mile, Edinburgh's oldest thoroughfare, which climbed directly up to Edinburgh Castle. The castle itself towered above the city, atop brooding black crags, the remains of primeval, long-dormant volcanoes, and had quite a colorful history. I was particularly fascinated by its bloody past. In earlier centuries, it had withstood long assault from enemies who attempted to seize it. It had held off Roman legions and then, much later, was occupied by English soldiers under Cromwell during his invasion of Scotland. Its final military action took place in 1745 when the army of Bonnie Prince Charlie failed in an attempt to breach its high walls. Now Edinburgh Castle was a major tourist attraction. As I entered, I looked up at the Royal Standard of Scotland, a fierce red lion rampant on a field of gold, ready to devour all enemies. It was late in the day when I finished my tour. The sun was about to set, casting long, deep velvet afternoon shadows over the rocky terrain. As I left the castle and descended along the Royal Mile, I paused. Why not? Why not return to the castle's foundations and look for a hidden cave? If so many others had already searched there, it was unlikely that I would be the one to find it, if there was actually one to find. A lark, a diversion, and perhaps part of a future book I was considering, Gothic Edinburgh. Why not? I retraced my steps. At the base, I began to examine the area beneath Edinburgh Castle, running my hands over the rock face, searching for any sign of an opening. I found nothing. Then, a voice that seemed to come from the rock face itself. Charles Lennon. Unseen by me, a narrow doorway had opened in the rock wall. A tall man stood silhouetted there. The ghost of Edinburgh Castle? No, I observed. This figure was bulky and substantial. No ghost.
I know of you, said the dark figure. I know your work, and I respect your knowledge. The fates have brought you to me.
Who are you? I asked.
Robert Louis Stevenson, said the tall man.
I shook my head in amusement. No, no, no. Stevenson died in Samoa in the South Seas in 1894. He was buried atop Mount Viria.
The body buried on Mount Viria is that of Edward, my illegitimate brother. He beckoned me forward. Come inside. We must talk.
I was intrigued. I entered the cave, which was illumined by a shaft of late afternoon sunlight that struck down from a fissure in the overhead rock, creating a cathedral-like effect. I noted the Victorian furniture, heavy tables and bookcases, ornate chairs and scroll lamps. In the shaft of light, I was able to see my host clearly for the first time. Pale skin, arresting black eyes, dark hair parted in the middle and full at the ears, a flow of mustache. He wore a faded smoking jacket of green velvet. I'd seen many photos of this same man, Robert Louis Stevenson. Impossible, and yet here he stood.
I am 157 years of age, Stevenson said. I was 44 when Edward was buried in my place. After the services, I came back here to Edinburgh to resume my experiments.
Experiments?
Yes, I was trying to halt the aging process and had achieved some success, but there was a terrible side effect. I was struggling to eliminate this side effect when I returned to Scotland. My efforts proved ineffectual.
Nonsense, I declared. I don't know what kind of joke you think you're playing, but I assure you, sir, that I do not jest, said Stevenson. Consider these.
He swung open the lid of a venerable oak chest, removed a packet of notes, and handed them to me. They were handwritten and were replete with figures and scientific equations. The results of my experiments, he said.
I'm no scientist, I told him. These make no sense to me.
Notice the date. 1893, I said. Precisely. My work was in most respects completed that year. In secret, of course.
If what you claim is true, a breakthrough such as this would be unprecedented.
And you wonder why I did not share my knowledge.
Yes, why not?
He would not let me.
He?
Mr. Lennon, please,
Stevenson gestured toward a high-backed Victorian chair.
Be seated. We have very little time. You must be away from this cave before darkness.
I don't understand.
You will, Mr. Lennon. I have much to tell you.
How long have you lived here?
Over a century, he said as he moved to the far side of the chamber to stoke up the fire, probing at the flames with a poker. The air chills one at this time of day.
You say you have much to tell me. Well, I leaned toward him. Speak up, man.
He put aside the poker and turned to face me. His pale skin seemed to glow in the warm, flickering light.
You are a well-known expert in Gothic literature. I am sure you know my early history.
I nodded. Well, you were born here in Edinburgh in 1850. You were reckless in your youth. You studied law at Edinburgh University. You passed the bar exam in 1875, but never practiced the profession.
I was determined to become a writer.
Your first major success was Treasure Island. You traveled in many parts of the world, ending in Samoa.
Do you know why I settled there?
You were fighting tuberculosis.
Yes, and I finally conquered it.
I am now a healthy man, Mr. Lanyon.
Well, considering you claim to be 157, I would certainly say so. I smiled tightly.
Stevenson's eyes were locked to mine. In 1885, I was living here in a large house in Old Town, formerly the residence of a physician, Jonathan K. Clyde. He was a brilliant man, and the notes I showed to you are mostly his. Dr. Clyde was near to perfecting his elixir when he died of a heart attack. I chose to carry on his work, much to my later regret.
J.K. Clyde, I muttered, turning the name over in my mind.
Jekyll and Hyde.
Exactly. When I completed Dr. Clyde's work after I suffered the frightful consequences, I wrote my own saga of Jekyll and Hyde.
A masterwork of fiction, I said.
No, no, Mr. Lanyon, not fiction. Fact. Hyde is all too real.
I stared at him.
Well, the after effect created a split personality. By completing Clyde's work, I birthed a monster. Hyde is a distillation of pure evil, and he is here.
Stevenson tapped his chest, dark eyes burning.
Inside me, watching, listening to everything we say. Hyde is in control, Mr. Lanyon, and I am his physical vehicle.
You've not been able to rid yourself of him?
No, and I've tried. Oh, dear God, how I've tried. Each night he emerges to go about his dark business of rape and murder. He's killed children, old men, young girls, animals.
Stevenson's eyes were afire.
Hyde must be destroyed. I am unable to do this. That is why I believe fortune has brought you here, to deal with this monster of my own creation.
You want me to destroy Hyde? He nodded.
How can I? An underground passage runs beneath the castle, along part of the Royal Mile, Stevenson told me. It once served as a dungeon prison. The passage opens into Castle Hill Street. Hyde uses it to enter Old Town at night. You can wait there and destroy him.
I shook my head. You say he's able to hear our words.
He'll be ready for me. I'll be the one who'll be destroyed.
Not if you use your wits, said Stevenson.
He knows only that you will be somewhere in the area. He will not know precisely where.
All right, I said. Let's assume, as insane as it sounds, that what you're saying is true.
In that case, you're asking me to risk my life. I am asking you to destroy a being of ultimate evil whose death will save countless innocent lives.
Stevenson removed an antique sword from a wall holder.
Use this and strike for the heart.
I have no skill with swords, I protested.
You must try. Leave quickly now. Darkness has come. You must not be here when Hyde appears.
When do you revert back?
At sunrise. By day I exist. By night only he does.
I'll do my best to help you, I said.
Not me, humankind.
I exited as Stevenson resealed the cave behind me.
Old Town as a walled medieval city had been established in the 12th century by King David I. In 1767, in order to expand the area, Edinburgh's city fathers had created New Town. They drained a lake to the north of the old city to create the dividing section of parkland now known as Princes Street Gardens. Today you can stand in modern Edinburgh, look across the gardens to Old Town with its cobbled alleyways, ancient tenements, brothels, sooty drinking dens, and lurid street life. Not a lot has changed in Old Town over the centuries. Apparently, from what Stevenson had told me, Hyde takes full advantage of the darker aspects of this area in his nightly forays, and he always carries a stout oak walking stick, which he is able to use with deadly skill. Despite the cold of the Scottish night, I was sweating as I crouched in the inky shadows of an alley along deserted Castle Hill Street. It was now well past midnight, and Hyde, of course, knew I was in wait for him. However, as Stevenson had pointed out, he had no way of knowing where I would be. The sword trembled in my hand. A high moon rose between scattered clouds, casting a pale yellow radiance over the area. Where was Hyde? Would he cross the mouth of the alley in front of me? It was insane to be here stalking a demonic creature out of centuries-old Gothic fantasy. At that moment, I saw him.
A stoop figure moving in a shambling half-run, a black cape flowing behind him. Underneath the cape, he was dressed in a dark greatcoat, and as he passed under the glowing street lamp, I shuddered. He easily matched the description provided by Stevenson in his book. His gross features were matted with hair, and his jaw thrust out wolfishly from a cruel-lipped face. His eyes seemed to burn like hellish coals under the brim of his hat. He stopped in the middle of the street and awkwardly swung his head around.
"Where be ye, Lanyon? 'Tis Hyde you want, eh? Well, I'm here. Come, laddie, come to old Hyde."
He tipped back his head and laughed. A harsh, rasping sound in the thick darkness. I was ready to step from the shadows, sword in hand, when I saw her. A teenager walking alone down Castle Hill, full-figured, wearing a split skirt, a lot of leg showing, a young prostitute, a prime target for Hyde. He loped toward her, raising his knob cane. My tongue was dry. My heart hammered in my chest. I could not let this happen. I had to stop him. The girl sensed the danger descending upon her. She whirled to face her attacker. I shouted, "Leave her alone!" And Hyde pivoted around to face me.
"Ah, Lanyon, there you be."
He rushed at me with a shout. As I stood at the dark mouth of the alley, the girl ran off into darkness. Reaching me, he clubbed the sword from my hand and gripped me by the throat, his fingers like iron pincers, his thumbs digging into my windpipe. Helplessly, I clawed at him, beating my left fist against his head, to no effect. His eyes were writhing dots of red fire, and his mouth twisted into a horrible smile. I was a few heartbeats from death. The Edinburgh police arrived. A patrol car cruising Castle Hill slammed to a stop, and two heavy-shouldered constables emerged from the vehicle, shouting at Hyde. Thwarted, he released me and vanished into the dense night darkness. I was on my knees, my hands at my bruised throat, gasping for breath. But I was alive. It was close to sunrise when I reached the cave below Edinburgh Castle. I had retrieved the fallen sword. If I was not able to kill Hyde before sunrise, before he could revert back to Stevenson, I would never be able to summon up the will to face him again. The cliché flashed in my mind, "It's now or never." "Hyde!" I shouted as I scanned the unbroken rock face. "I'm here! Show yourself!" A section of the gray stone slid back, revealing the stooped monster.
"Aye, so it's Lanyon, is it? Come back here to die?"
He reached out for me with his powerful hands and pulled me inside the cave.
"Ye be a great fool, Charles Lanyon," he growled, as he picked up an iron poker. "Now, get ready to die, me lad."
In my obsession to destroy Hyde, I'd been depending on blind luck to see me through. I had no plan of attack or strategy to deal with this evil creature. I told myself that Hyde was right, that I was indeed a great fool to have blundered into this situation. Now I accepted that I would pay for my foolishness with my life. But Hyde was too anxious to complete the job he had begun on Castle Hill Street. As he lunged toward me, savagely brandishing the poker, his right foot struck a small rock on the cave floor. He stumbled, lurching sideways, off balance. I struck at his arm and slammed a fist across his wrist. Numb by the blow, he dropped the poker and came at me with both hands open. I ducked under his charge and brought up the sword. With my full strength, I drove the blade into his chest. Hyde staggered back, a froth of sudden blood at his lips.
"Damn ye! Damn ye to hell!"
And he fell hard to the cave floor. On his back, bleeding profusely from the wound to his heart, he glared up at me, his eyes radiating hatred. It was morning. A long shaft of sunlight speared down from the roof of the cave and bathed Hyde's face. It began to change. The looming brow receded. The eyes softened. The mouth thinned as it formed a faint smile. "Thank you," Robert Louis Stevenson said, as fresh blood bubbled from his lips. "You need medical help," I said. I'll call emergency." He raised his hand to cut off my words. "No, no. Do not try to save my life. In saving me, you also save Hyde." He coughed raggedly. And his words were strained. "As I die, Hyde dies with me. You destroyed him, Mr. Lanyon. Thank you." His eyes closed. His muscles convulsed in a final tremor. Then all movement ceased. I walked from the cave, shading my eyes against the yellow flare of morning sun. It was a fine spring day in Edinburgh.